Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am really happy today to be interviewing Peter Serko. Peter needs no introduction to many of us on Vashon Island. He ran the technology program at the Vashon High School for a while and was beloved by many. And he has a fascinating career as a father, as an activist, as a photographer, who Manon became a photographer later in life. He's someone who hasn't let not knowing how to do it stop him from doing things. So to me, he's sort of like the archetypal creative, just letting the urge come through, following it, and not having to know how it's all going to work before it gets going. As I just said, he mastered professional photography later in life and wrote and performed in his first play at age 60. Peter, is that right? I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Right. Yeah. Well, I sound like a fascinating person. I wish I felt that way sometimes.
reach your own website at petersirko.com, and you'll get really interested in you. And I think the real love project that stands out is the work that you've done around the David Serko Project, honor of your brother, who sadly died from AIDS in 1992 at age 32. And as part of honoring David, you're also the founder of Vashon World AIDS Day, where you're going to be collaborating again this year with Cato Kane and Chris Boccia. So, and that's coming up soon. That's the first weekend in December, am I right?
Right. The 7th and the 8th of December this year. World AIDS Day is technically December 1st, but it doesn't always fall on a convenient day for doing programming. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great, because this way you get a whole weekend, and it sounds like you're going to have a full one. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm going to start out by asking a kind of hard question, because I interviewed the filmmaker Phil Grabsky a couple of weeks ago, and he did a fabulous documentary on Afghanistan, following a youth in Afghanistan for 20 years. It's great work.
Oh, my gosh.
But he said to me, he said, Sally, you know, I've shown this film around the world, but in the United States, where we spent $1 trillion, a couple trillion on Afghanistan, people aren't interested because they've just moved on. And I was thinking about that when I was thinking about World AIDS Day, because do you find the same, that some people will say to you, haven't we moved on? Isn't AIDS something that was key to the 80s and 90s, but you know, aren't we on to new crises right now that deserve our attention? And if they do, how do you counter that?
That's a real good point, because you know, many times I found myself saying, you know, gee, you know, should we be doing this, and does anybody really care at this point? But I mean, the fact is that, you know, AIDS is still a crisis around the world. You know, 38 million people have died of AIDS, you know, since the early 1980s. And almost an equal number are living with HIV and AIDS around the world. So it's still a crisis. And in some countries, in some parts of the world, particularly in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa, you know, it's still, you know, a life and death kind of thing. But, you know, fortunately, we've made breakthroughs that have, you know, letting people live healthy lives, but they need to take their medications, and they need to be able to afford their medications. They need to be able to get to places where they have their medications. So people are still becoming infected. So it's not gone by any means. It's just kind of been displaced, and it's still something that's very important. And what my interest has always been since doing this is really telling the story of the early days, because unless you were alive, Unless you really knew somebody, you probably didn't really pay that close attention to what was going on. And so my interest is being sharing that story, and particularly that sharing that story with younger folks. We've done a lot of work over the years at the high school and the middle school.
Yeah.
Kids, this story really resonates with kids. So that's my main interest, is just telling the story of the early days. And that's kind of what we're doing this World AIDS Day. We're doing that kind of work.
Yeah, I want to hear the specifics of what you're doing. And I was also thinking, in a way, I'm still surprised when I meet someone who for whom Vietnam has no realities, since that was a seminal event in my, coming of
Sure.
age story. And when I saw the picture that you have on your website of your brother getting bludgeoned by police, kind of said it all. And it also it took you back into a world that seems so far away. I mean, that is so real, and yet how many people can really appreciate what that was?
Right. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that photo, because I had never seen that photo. I knew my brother was an activist. I knew he was involved with a group called ACT UP, AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. And I knew he'd been arrested, but I didn't really know any details about it. And I stumbled, literally stumbled on that photograph. I was doing some research about ACT UP, and I was looking on Wikipedia, like, what did they do, when, and so on, because I was trying to find out, when my brother might have been arrested. And it was just in a footnote, a link in that article. It said a gallery of photos to 1988, what's called Wall Street 2. It was the second protest at Wall Street. And so I just clicked on it. And it took me to this website where they had a bunch of photos of the protest. And lo and behold, there was this photo of David. And I tracked down the photographer. His name is Clay Walker. He lives outside of Atlanta. And I sent him an email and said, hey, that's my brother. Do you mind if I use them? And he and I became friends. And he's been to Vashon. He came, and when I did my show back home, my solo show, he came, and he actually stayed at my house with my parent. Not my parents, came to the show, took photos of me. And I mean, it just kind of came full circle. In fact, I was just chatting with him this week. So yeah,
Yeah.
when I saw that photo just really motivated me to do what I ended up doing, which is creating a one-man show out of what I learned
Yeah.
in the course of the David Serko project. So.
So take me back, because your brother died at 32. He had been an activist before that, and then he had AIDS. He died of AIDS
Yeah.
or complications from AIDS. How old were you when he died?
I think I was 37 or 38. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah. He called me, and he tested positive in 1988, and he called me on the phone. And I can picture myself. I was just in our kitchen. We had two little kids at home at the time, and I just picture myself talking to him on the phone. And when he just said, I got tested and that I'm HIV positive, and I just, it was something, it wasn't unexpected. I was following along with what's going on, and I knew enough that this is a very serious situation. And so I immediately, a couple of days later, went to New York City and saw him. And so we spent a lot of time together in on the kind of the final years of his life. And I was fortunate to be with him the last 3 weeks. In fact, we're coming up on the 32nd anniversary of his death in 2 days, November 23rd. But the interesting thing that happened, I'll just tell you a little bit about the David Serko project, because it has everything to do with World AIDS Day and
Yeah.
what we're doing now. My brother's death was such a profound experience for me that I knew. I promised myself when he died that one day I was going to tell the story about his life and his death. I didn't know how I was going to do it, or when I was going to do it, and what form it was going to take, but I knew what I was going to do. It was just such a powerful, powerful experience for me. And As we came up to the 20th anniversary of it in 2012, I thought, okay, well, if I'm ever going to do this, I got to do it right now. And so I started the David Circo Project, and my goal was to find out something about my brother's life. I'm 6 years older than him, and when I left home at 18, he was 12, and I basically missed everything. My brother was, performed in high school, performed in college. I never saw my brother perform. My brother performed on stages all over the world. He lived in New York. I lived here. It was before the internet, before cell phones, before internet match. So we just, we talked once in a while, and we were really close. But
Can I just
so
ask you a side question on your backstory?
sure.
Because I was fascinated to read that you came out of an Orthodox family.
Yes.
And so, but you clearly knew that your brother was gay and he was living a different life. But from what I've seen of Orthodox churches, that's not necessarily a supported path. Was that a tension in your family?
No, it was not. That's the kind of the beautiful thing about my family. My family was completely supportive. The people in our church were totally supportive.
Really?
I mean, my family, my grandfather, my grandmother started the church that I grew up in. We just grew up in this ethnic kind of community, and my family was greatly loved there, and my brother was loved. So, no, it was not. I mean, it could have been an issue easily, but it was not, thankfully. And he was buried from the church. We had a real funeral and the whole business.
I just wonder because there's been this brouhaha with the Orthodox Church here on the island,
Oh
and
yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. Yeah.
the disrespect
Yeah.
for the gay
No.
community. So
Yeah, I went to church for many years there, so I know them very well. And so yeah, I was very saddened by that whole situation, but that's a whole nother
a whole other matter. But so anyway,
matter.
but I just wonder because I wanted to get into the backstory because not, some families were torn apart,
Absolutely.
and but your family wasn't, and you guys stayed solid, and you were right with David at the end.
So what I did with the David Circo project, I wanted to learn about what I missed. I wanted to find people that knew my brother, and I wanted to hear their stories. And I ended up finding about 100 people who knew him at various po points in his life, and people he went to school with, people he went to college with, people he reacted with, and so on. People sent me stuff, and the kind of the universal theme was everybody loved my brother. My brother was a super charismatic guy, very talented, very generous, just a lot of fun to be around, and everybody, and people have told their kids about them. I mean, people brought their kids to the show to see this thing. So I just, after I was gathering, I said, well, what am I going to do with all this I'm learning? So I thought, I'm going to have to get up on stage and tell this story on stage. And so I ended up writing this one-man show, and my goal was to take it back home. So my goal was to take it back home and perform it in a theater that my brother performed in when he was in college, and when he still lived at home. And that's what I did in July of 2014. And it was really a mind-blowing experience. So then I made a film about it, a document called Footnote. It tells about finding that photograph. So anyway,
And you performed, didn't you perform it out here?
Yeah, I performed it in I've actually performed it quite a few times. There's been a number of iterations of the show, but yeah, I performed it in Tacoma. I started off in a th I've never performed before, so I thought, okay, I booked this show in Endicott. That's where I grew up, and I thought, okay, I've got to like get on stage and do this before I go back home. But I want to be good because most people that are going to come to this thing are going to be professional. A lot of my brother friends are professional theater people. I mean, I can't not do a good job. And when one of the shows I did was at the high school theater, and then from that show I took it back home and did it back there. So yeah, it was very, very I have to say it was, I consider it the greatest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I'm incredibly proud of it, and I've actually rewatched some of the show recently. Thought, man, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, to have gone from zero to a full performance, that is quite impressive and all.
Well,
Although I
yeah.
never quite understood the reference to Mark Zuckerberg. My
Oh
brother
yeah.
kissed Mark Zuckerberg. What was that?
Well, first of all, most of what I discovered was on Facebook, okay, as a result of Facebook. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg, started Facebook. I had a dream that my brother kissed him. And so I thought, hey, that sounds like an interesting title.
It was.
My original title was My Brother Is Dead and Other Funny Stories, but which I really liked, but I thought, I don't think I'm going to do that. So I stuck with that, and I redid the show. We for World AIDS Day 2019, I think we did. I called it out. I rewrote it as a multi-character show, and we did a stage reading at the high school. I think it was 2019. Yeah.
So then you were committed to keeping the story of your brother alive, and you had done all this research to find out who he was, discovering things you never knew before, and then bringing that out to the community. How did your commitment to Vashon World AIDS Day come ensue?
Well, in 2018, I was sitting in my house in Winthrop thinking, okay, it just always seemed odd to me that, Vashon being such a gay friendly place and with so many LGBTQ folks living there, that we never did anything to commemorate World AIDS Day. I thought that was just kind of odd to me. So I just fired off an email to VCA and to O Space and I think a couple other people, and I said, "Hey, I'm interested in doing something for World AIDS Day. Would you be interested in participating?" And everybody said yes. And so I came up with a couple ideas of what we did. We did a Freddie Mercury tribute at O Space, which was just unbelievably good. We did first year we did a stage reading of A Normal Heart, which was the first AIDS rated play written by Larry Kramer, and that's how I met Chris and Kate. They
Oh,
were
okay.
involved in that. That's how I got connected with them. And then we did so the first year we just also did something. I did a thing in the AP art class at the high school, working with students about talking about the role art played in the activist movement during that time of AIDS. Art was a big part of the activist movement. And so
Was
we
that what is feature? There's a feature on your website where you're interviewed by Stephen Silla,
yeah,
and there's a lot of art.
that's the second one. We did
The second
two.
one.
Yeah, that we did. Yeah, we did two. It turned out really that was really wonderful, and students really got into it. And so we've done a number of things in the schools over the years. Kate has done a number of things at the middle school because Kate is a real expert on the situation in Africa in particular, having worked on the ground and worked at policy and so on. So and the plight of girls in Africa is the most critical thing. I mean, the highest incidence of HIV and AIDS is among young girls, just because of the culture, their socioeconomic status. So we've actually done a lot, all just kind of by like this year, we just said, well, let's do something, and we end up, doing it. People, gravitate to it, and so that it just happened by fluke. So that, getting back to the big why you asked was, I just sent an email out, said, do you want to do something? And I came up a bunch of ideas. And I've learned along the way when you do things like this, you need to tell people really, give people some idea of like what you want to do. Don't let them have, force them to try to come up with an idea. So I, said, let's do a Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury death from AIDS was a very significant event in the history of AIDS awareness. Rock Hudson, Liberace, all those high visibility people were significant. And Magic Johnson saying that he was HIV positive, those are all very significant milestones. And so,
So
Right.
that's
What
kind of how it happened.
do you have in store for us in December?
Yeah, so this year we're doing the Laramie Project, which is just a very powerful play. Not a play about HIV and AIDS, but a play about basically homophobia and the death of Matthew, really tragic death of murder of Matthew Shepard. We're doing that sort of kind of in response to the situation that arose on Vashon, in the last year, last half of the year.
Which situation is that?
With the
video that the basically hate speech that was going on with gay people that, Father Trifon and, just the stuff that kind of arose out of that whole situation. Chris was the one that really orchestrated that, since Chris is a real theater guy, and he wanted to do it, and I said, yeah, let's just do it. And so we've got a really fantastic cast. It's going to be a stage reading, and so that's on the 7th. Now, had the was this written specially for Vashon World AIDS Day, or had
No,
it?
no, no. This is a play that's, I don't know when, I can't tell you when Matthew Shepard died, but it's actually probably, it could be 20 years ago. No, so much time has passed. So it was a play that was written out of that. And we're working with the Matthew Shepard Foundation. His parents founded a foundation, and they've been super supportive. In fact, his dad, I think, is going to have a little piece at the beginning of the show that we're going to show that, kind of addressing to our community. So we're doing that. That's on Saturday night, starting at 6:30 at the high school. And then on Sunday, December 8th, we're showing the documentary film How to Survive a Plague, which was a Academy Award nominated documentary in 2012. And it is about the AIDS activist movement and the impact the AIDS activist movement had on the breakthroughs that ended up allowing people to live with HIV and AIDS. It's a really great film. You don't see my brother in it, but there are several scenes where my brother is just kind of on the periphery of what's being shown on the screen. And a good friend of my brother's, Ron Goldberg, who worked on the film, is featured in it.
Interesting.
It's a great film, a really great film, very powerful. And it tells the story of we're kind of billing it as, this is what activism looks like. And it just shows it. It clearly demonstrates the power of activism and what can be done. And many people consider the AIDS activist movement, and particularly the group called ACT UP, to be the model for activism, that citizen activism. It's a great film, very powerful, and particularly in light of, these times where activism, I think, is going to be more important than ever.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as you were talking about what's coming in December, because I think many of us feel broken and disheartened with current events, and the question comes up, what is there to do? It's this the di things seem so stacked in a kind of wrong direction,
Sure.
and so I have this split reaction where I don't want to have my heart broken again by, tragedy. And yet I can also feel within what you're offering, this an opportunity to see how one makes it through and really creates positive change, which seems so essential to right now.
And that's kind of the message that everything that we've done in World AIDS Day since we started in 2018, the message is always, one person could make a difference. And the AIDS activist movement demonstrates that. My brother didn't survive, but his efforts, made a difference. He was a foot soldier in this effort, and many people didn't make it.
But many people lived, and the reason why that all kind of came to fruition when it did was because of the activists, not because the government decided, oh, we're gonna fix this, we're gonna participate. No, they had to be pushed. And so the film tells a story how a particular subset of the story of the movement of a group called TAG, Treatment Access Group, Treatment Access Group, TAG. It was a group within ACT UP who educated themselves about the science of drug testing and approval. And what they did was they knew as much as anybody else did, and they ended up working with drug companies and the FDA, kind of pushing their way in, and making proposals that were ended up adopt being adopted and affected how all drugs are tested nowadays. For example, back in those times, if they were testing drugs, they assumed that if the drug test was done on men, that equated to women. I mean, they just didn't separate those two apart. Well, the AIDS activist says, no, we're seeing the fact that women are manifesting symptoms and so on very differently than from men. And so you cannot do these tests, and just assume that we're going to do that. They did this thing called parallel track, which allowed them to release drugs kind of early while they were still testing them. These are all things that the movement brought about and changed the way drugs are tested and approved for all of us since then. So it tells a kind of a subset of the story about the treatment action group.
It sounds really timely and really
It is timely. It is timely.
it's also, it's the whole question of activism. It's almost like it makes you wonder what an activist is. And I think for people of our generation, I assume that you're somewhere in the 60 to 70-year-old range,
I am 70.
Well, then you would know, because a lot of us who came, were active in the anti-war movement in the Vietnam days, we gave it our all, and then I don't know, life moved on, and then there's been the grand disillusionment, which makes one wonder, oh, what was all that activism about? Did it really make a difference? Because you see where we haven't advanced in certain areas where people were actively working for, 40, 50 years ago. But to rekindle a spirit of what activism is all about seems really interesting and timely for us.
And also activism has many different forms, So, I mean, there's activism that are the activism hitting the streets, and so on, which kind of what, at our age, we were recalling those days of Vietnam and so on. But, I mean, I consider myself an activist, but I'm not out on the street doing anything. But I'm doing things behind the scenes. We're doing this World AIDS Day stuff. I consider those all activist kinds of
Yeah,
activities.
and you're
So
also,
it's.
as a 70-year-old or whatever, you're the role of supporting youth activists seems like a really important one. And it sounds like both the World AIDS Project and some of the local work around activist art is helping young activists to develop.
I had a really profound realization. It was our first year doing the World AIDS Day stuff, and I was working with at the high school with the art class, and the Riptide, that which is the high school newspaper, a young reporter interviewed me about what we were doing. And she said to me, she said, I remember when you came and spoke to our eighth grade health class. I went to the eighth grade health class and did a shortened version of my show. So I performed in health classes in eighth grade. And at the time I did it, I was thinking to myself, am I making any, like, am I getting any headway here? Because, some of the kids have got their heads down on the desk, and, I mean, a small subset of the class seems like they're actually paying attention to what's going on. And she said, I remember when you came to the class and saw and did your show. And I said, well, what do you remember about it? And she said, I remember how powerful and heartfelt what you had to share was. And I went and I read some of the things that she had written before after that. And then what she ended up writing was like a call to act. It was just beautiful. It was just a beautiful, it's on our website, a call to action. And I just realized that, you just never know who's listening, and you just don't know who you're touching in some way that is going to spark something even a little bit down the road. But here's this young gal who was in eighth grade who I watched me do this and heard me and remembered it. And it had obviously had an impact on her. And it was just such a beautiful thing for me to realize at that point, because, I just, again, getting back to feeling discouraged and does anybody care? And yeah, people do. And people are listening, and young people are listening. And
What do you think
so.
the impact of was of the AIDS art? The art activist project you did with the AP students, the one that you filmed
Yeah.
and that's on your website.
The one thing it was is you can we got to them as they could realize that their art could be powerful, that you could actually say something with your art that you felt. And and we didn't tell them what they had to write, do, what they had to do. It's just something you feel strongly about. And it was all, all different things. So the first time we did the first time we did it, the focus really was on, I identified 15 men who had died, who lived on Vashon, who had died of AIDS. And we kind of did a visual tribute to them. They made tiles and so on. So a lot of it was associated with that. We called it Lost to AIDS. We called the show Lost to AIDS. And, but again, they realized that these are all talented art students, that they could do something with their art to say something. And I think for many of them, again, it was a light bulb goes on. They're just used to, doing what they would normally do. And now they had the opportunity and to do something powerful. And Wes McLean, worked with us then, and he's the one that was responsible for all the murals around town, the paintings, drawings of people who have been killed by police around the country. So he worked with us. So he was in there, working with students, and the exhibit turned out to just be beautiful. I mean, it was great. It was just great. And so, and we did that during COVID. We were wearing masks, and it was not the most ideal situation to work in, but it was great. It was really great.
Just from the little I saw in the video, what moved me was the fact that they were finding their authentic place of activism and then sharing that, that it wasn't like something they were supposed to do or were supposed to be on with the program. And I loved that, there was one that was written in a language I couldn't even understand. Someone talking about their homeland, it was
It
very
was somebody in
powerful.
the south, like in Indonesia or something
Or
like that. I can't.
Tonga or something like that.
And yeah, it was just amazing to see, and just the display was, it just turned out great. It just turned out really great. And it's not easy working with students. I mean, it's a challenge. But it's an important facet of this. We weren't able to do anything much with students, though we have one high school student involved with the Laramie Project show. But anyway, yeah, working with kids is kind of a part of our little mission, I suppose.
And you've been a creative and an artist in a number of ways. It seems like the list keeps growing from, photography, playwright, actor, novelist. I mean, and there's probably more I don't even know about. What do you think the arts, what can they give us in terms of activism that we might not get any other way?
I think it just allows you to express something that you don't always have the right words, to do. And, particularly if it's visual, it's something that invites the reader, or the not the reader, the viewer, to put themselves into that, and that's the beauty of art. I mean, Ansel Adams has a famous saying that there's two people in every photograph, the photographer and the viewer. And your challenge, really, your challenge as a photographer is to make a photograph that allows the viewer to put themselves easily into that photograph. And so I just think that the arts is just a powerful vehicle. And I think in the current climate, I think we're going to see art really have a resurgence in and certainly during the AIDS crisis. The earlier art was just vital to that movement because it was before the time of the internet, cell phone. There was just no way to communicate, and that was used as a communicate. Art was used as a tool of communication, and if you look at the art that was created then, it's just. And first of all, there were super talented people. There were people who were like professional advertising people, and these were really highly skilled folks who brought their skills to bear on creating iconic. Art that that lives on, that's just so powerful.
Yeah,
So
and in this world where it's so easy to get jaded by the massive amounts of information and all the blah 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 that's coming in through pundits and analysts and all, where you learn in a sense how to numb out to that flow of information, but you don't numb out to one child's poem or one display on the wall that really comes from the heart or one iconic poster that says it all or one photograph of a brother,
Absolutely.
35 years ago in a, confrontation with the police. They go in a different pathway. And I think we're not jaded that way.
Yeah, it kind of cuts right to the core, in a way that words really, really can't. So
Yeah.
it's interesting when I did my show, most of the show is done in verse, and I've never done anything like that. But the reason I did it that way is I thought that format, the poem, if you will, is a way to pack a lot of information into a little space. And so that's what I did, So if you I'm happy to send you some things you can watch. That's what I did. So I told many of these stories, particularly these real personal stories between my brother and I, in verse, not in prose, So
Interesting. Well, I would love to see those. And if you send them soon, I'll put them in the show notes for this episode on Voice of Vashon.
great.
And we've already decided that you're going to come back and talk about your novel. So I will s save my usual question of what's next, Peter Serko, because we will have time. But right now, let's do some straight out promo for the weekend. Give us this, again, the basics of when it is, where it is, how people can find out, and why they should be there, so that we can
Yeah, great.
end on that
Wonderful.
note.
Wonderful. Well, we have a website, first of all, at VashonWorldAIDSDay.org, all kind of one word, which has a lot of information about this year and about also what we've done in the past. And so the weekend starts on December 7th, a Saturday, starting at 6:30 at the high school, the Vashon High School Theater. And that will be the Laramie Project. It's a play. It's about 2 hours, and then we're going to have we've invited some community people to participate afterwards in a kind of a chat back session. So that's going to happen post play, and then on Sunday, the next day, on December 8th at 1 o'clock at the Vashon Island Theater, will be the film How to Survive a Plague. An Academy Award nominated documentary by David France, which tells the story of the important story of the AIDS activist movement. And we're calling that This is what activism looks like. So we're hoping that people turn up for that, and we'll have also a chat back. There's a woman on Vashon, Dana Sherholtz, who was a member of ACT UP in Seattle and is a photographer, and she documented the activist movement in Seattle. And so we've shown her photos, super powerful photos, many times in our over the years. And we'll have some of her photos that will be shown before the film starts, as you're kind of coming in and sitting there. And Dana will be there to talk about her work after the show's over. So
Brilliant.
that's one. So that's 1 o'clock on Sunday.
1 o'clock on Sunday. Okay, great.
yeah,
Well,
yeah.
it sounds super rich, and I assume you're going to be there. You're coming back to the
Oh yeah.
island for all
Oh yeah. Oh
this?
no. Oh no. I'll be there the whole weekend. I'll be here the whole weekend. In fact, I'm hosting the Sunday event, so I'll be doing the talk afterwards, or the a little community conversation afterwards. Yeah, no, w would not miss it. And I come back to Vashon all the time. I still have lots of friends there,
Yeah.
and yeah. So
Yeah. Once an islander, it's always kind of in
no,
you and stuff. So,
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I look forward, I think on Monday, I'm going to continue with an interview with Kate and Chris to have their
Great.
perspective on the work. But thank you. And thank you so much for what you're doing. You've opened
Thank
my
you.
eyes to why it really is important these days, even
Yeah.
though AIDS may seem like it was back in the 80s. That spirit of activism, as well as the need to continue to address the AIDS crisis, really speaks to what you're doing. So, thank you
No,
for
so
that.
th yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to talk to you. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.